free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can find a list of past guests, download those interviews, see who's scheduled for upcoming shows, and if you're listening live, you can see the call-in numbers. We're joined tonight, December 8, 2008, by John Moray, son of the late P. Henry Moray. He's one of the most famous names in the free energy world. In the late 1920s, Thomas Henry Moray demonstrated a radiant free energy device to many people who were unable to find a hidden power supply. Moray called this device a solid-state detector known as the Moray valve. It included a large antenna connected by a complex series of high-voltage capacitors, transformers, and semiconductors. By supposedly simulating existing oscillations of radiant energy from space, the device supposedly ran for several days producing 50 kilowatts of power. The demonstrations attracted newspapers and scientists from Bell Laboratories and from the Department of Agriculture, but none could attest to how the device actually operated. But neither could evidence be found of fraud. The device was eventually destroyed by his assistant, Felix Prodich, who apparently was angered that Moray would not sell his device to corporate interests. In the late 1930s, T. Henry Moray developed advanced semiconductors and transistors. He passed away in 1974 without seeing his technology come to light. His son, John, who joins us tonight, is now a vibrant 80 years old. I met with John in his home last week to view a DVD he just released that documents the life of his father and the technology that is his legacy. The DVD is titled, The Sea of Energy in Which the Earth Floats. It is an excellent presentation. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sterling. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you could join us. I realize you have had a lot going on this evening. I'm glad you could make some time for us. As I mentioned, I really enjoyed that DVD presentation, and I hope that everyone avails themselves to listen to that. It is available for sale on your site, thehouseofmoray.org. Is that correct?
Yes. It's all in small case. thehouseofmoray.org.
And Moray is
spelled
M-O-R-A-Y.
M-O-R-A-Y.
Yep. Well, tell us, give us an idea about this technology that you got to see firsthand.
Well, my father believed from the time he was a child that there would be energy throughout the universe. And he grew up in the days when crystal sets were just getting started, and he felt that if man could build a crystal set that could bring in radio without a battery, then he could build a crystal that would bring in this energy that he felt sure that there must be there. Or you might say an intuitive belief that there was such an energy. And so he started in 1909 to work on this, and by 1911 he had able to get a spark in a carbon arc. Now, he continued to work, and he continued to try to build semiconductors. And finally, after a period of time, he was able to build a semiconductor that brought in radio, and then one that would bring in this energy. And I grew up watching him work on this. That was my my reward for having been good and done my chores when I was a boy was to be allowed to get down and watch my father work in the basement of our home on his device.
So you saw this thing operating?
Oh, yes, a number of times. And I saw him working on it and trying to adjust it. He worked at night because during the day, the energy he assumed from the sun would overwhelm the unit. He used to describe the energy coming to the earth like the waves of a sea. And at times it would burn out his whole unit because it would be so strong. And at other times it worked just very smoothly. I remember very specifically watching my father work when he put circuit breakers into the system, relays to cut the power when he would get these surges. And this saved him considerable energy and time. He had his semiconductors built in stages. He would start them out and send them to Germany to be put in quartz. And they would put it into the quartz and then send it back to him, and he would send it to England to be sealed and the final touches put on. And he knew a number of jewelers that would do work for him, and this is how he did such minute work. His semiconductors were larger than what we have today, and he always put his semiconductors inside of a tube. So this is where people have the misunderstanding that the tubes were essential. It wasn't a heated cathode tube. It was a cold cathode and worked on his semiconductors. In fact, that's where he first had his first problem, was the patent office refused to give him a patent on his semiconductor because he didn't use a heated cathode. And they said, well, it won't produce a sensible current. In other words, the old crystal set that they used in the radios wouldn't have worked. The patent office didn't know that much. Patent examiners are not the final touch in the modern research.
So that patent was denied?
Pardon? I couldn't hear you.
So that patent was denied?
Yeah, that patent was denied. In fact, he filed up to five different patents, and they were all refused on various grounds. One of the refusals wanted him to divide it into a dozen patents instead of just one, and of course, he didn't have the money and the background to do that. Even those days when patents weren't as expensive as they are now.
So, an idea of how many demonstrations were done on this technology. How many people saw this?
Oh, I'd say hundreds of people saw the device work, because my father would leave his laboratory door open and let people come in and watch him when he was working, because there was always speculation as to what was going on. And he gained a lot of notoriety, but also a lot of opposition. For instance, when he got his REA, the Rural Electrification Administration contract, John L. Lewis, who was the coal boss, labor king, objected because he didn't want any energy opposition other than coal. Opposition like this developed over the years where he had, for instance, the Utah Power and Light put a meter on every pole for a block up the street, or a couple of blocks, in fact, I might say, trying to prove that Dad was stealing power from the power company. And people have tried to explain it by saying that it was induction. Well, induction over a considerable distance wouldn't have been possible. And even though I know of some companies that claim that they have done transmission of power without wires, and I know some people say Tesla did this, but no, I don't think that there's any real documentation to this claim. Not like the documentation I have.
Utah Power and Light put meters on all these poles. Did they walk away concluded that he was not stealing?
Oh, yeah, they had to. Well, they never said anything officially, but if he had been stealing power, they would have taken action against him.
Yeah. When we come back from break, I want to talk about more of the devices, how many devices were built, how much power output did they produce, how long did they run continuously, and I also want to talk about price point. The price on this thing, if it were to be commercialized, is really astonishing. That's going to be an interesting number to hear. So does that sound like a plan to for what we'll talk about in the next segment?
Yeah, we can talk about that. As far as price are concerned, once we get the semiconductors standardized so that we can manufacture them in mass production, the semiconductors shouldn't cost any more than semiconductors we have on the market now. In fact, people say to me, well, why don't you use commercial semiconductors? Well, some bright young physicist might know the semiconductors I could use, but I don't.
Yeah, we'll get the price point of the entire thing when we come back from break. Thanks, John.
All right.
Will you be ready when gas prices go back up? Convert your vehicle to a hydrogen boost hybrid. Get 15 to 25% improved gas mileage guaranteed or your money back. And cleaner emissions. Hydrogen Boost has 8 years of experience in hydrogen injection and mileage enhancement and a money back satisfaction guarantee. Visit www.hydrogen-boost.com or call 518-480-4026. Hydrogen Boost, 518-480-4026 or visit hydrogen-boost.com.
Hey, you're free energy now!
Sterling Allen coming back at you. We have John Murray on the, as a guest tonight with us. He is the son of T. Henry Murray, the inventor of a radiant energy technology that was able to deliver up to 50,000 watts to solid-state energy technology. And John just recently produced a DVD. I mean, we're talking a week ago. This is a brand new product that you can get to see the documentation on this technology and the life of his father and what the status is of this technology today. In this segment, we'd like to go a little bit into kind of the price point of this technology as well as some of the prototyping that's been done. How many prototypes and kind of how long did they run and how much did they put out? Let's start with that last question of the prototypes. How many and how much did they put out?
Well, my father never really built more than one unit. He would always cannibalize that unit to build a larger unit. At first, all he could draw was a small wattage, and then eventually, about 1928, he was able to draw 100 watts of power. But then it gradually built up through the 30s, and by 39, he had over 5,000 watts. And then in the early 40s, he came up with the 50,000 watts of power. And always, because it was so hard for him to make the, to get the semiconductors put together, he really only built one unit. He would just add stages to that unit.
Did he take pictures along the way of these various prototypes?
Yes, and I've got this documentation. He took pictures, and when I joined him in working after the Korean War, I made it an effort to organize these pictures and sworn affidavits so that we'd have them in a record.
How many boxes or inches or feet of documentation would you say you have?
Oh, I've got several files full of documents that verify what was done. A lot of people who saw it work were willing to give him letters and introductions. And I've collected a few of the best ones to put into my first into my book, and then when I wanted to rewrite my book, I put this DVD together.
Now the DVD title, isn't that the same title as the book title?
Yes, it's the Sea of Energy DVD instead of the book.
I noticed in your DVD you do show a number of these documents. They're really quite fascinating. Have these never been released before?
Well, the documents have been released in my book, but not with the comments that I've made. And then I have shown research that we did in the late 60s and early 70s at the laboratory.
Now you show in the video data, you showed photographs, affidavits, there's quite a number of things. And I thought the DVD was very well put together. It wasn't dry like some scientific videos tend to be. I thought you did a good job in the flow of the presentation and the sequence.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, that's what I tried to do. The book was a little on the dry side, the story, and I felt that it needed rewriting. But it was easier to put out this DVD than it was to rewrite the book.
How much help did you have on the DVD? Because obviously there's more than just you involved in that.
Well, I went to a commercial outfit to photograph the introduction and to take my slides and put them on the DVD. I wrote everything myself. All the words are my own wording. So I've had no ghostwriters or anyone else to help me that way.
In all of these prototypes that were built, what would you say is the longest period of time that one prototype ran continuously without stopping, and how much was it putting out?
Well, they had a unit that ran for over a week, and it was putting out over 100 watts.
Was that the one that was terminated because the city was doing some kind of testing and
digging and a sharp blow to the ground and the cat whisker dislodged.
Which was dislodged?
You know, most people in today's modern electronics don't appreciate what I'm saying when I say a cat's whisker. It used to have to be adjusted by hand and held in place, and it was very sensitive. This is one of the things that in the modern semiconductor industry they have overcome.
Now, let's get back to the other question when you talk about semiconductor. And we were talking earlier, you were saying that these semiconductors there's a lot involved in building them, sending them over to Germany to have the quartz installed, send them over to Europe for some final touches. And even in today's pricing, if I remember right, you were talking about $30,000 to $40,000 to build one of these in replicating one-off on one of these devices.
Well, I think it'd be in order to build one. I think 30 or 40,000 is a little on the low side, because you could spend that much just building one semiconductor. The semiconductor industry has gone a different path than what my father did. Bell Laboratories and their germanium semiconductor extruded theirs, where Dad's were made with a different method. He never extruded semiconductors.
Now, your dad was one of the pioneers in the semiconductor industry, wasn't he?
Yes, his first patent application was 1929, and it was denied in 1931. And it was a germanium semiconductor for a radio, similar to what Bell Laboratories came up with 20 years later.
Now, when you were talking about one-off pricing on these things, by the time it is mass-produced, the price is brought down substantially. You were saying that a device that would put out 50,000 watts would cost about the price of a television, about $1,500?
I can't see any reason why the unit would cost any more than what a television, because once we get the technology properly handled, we'll be able to mass-produce them just like they mass-produce semiconductors today.
You're talking about a device that would sit in the garage that would power several homes. 50,000 watts is a lot of output, probably 10 times as much as a home needs.
A house normally draws between 3 kilowatts to 5 kilowatts at the maximum with everything running.
But let's pick this up when we come back from the bottom of the hour news and some more ads. Talk about where this technology is now and what's going to happen to it and what might be done to finally bring it forward.
All right. Are you looking at a station break again?
Yep.
Gonna make a change in some lives today. We will work for the
humanity now.
We really want to change the world today.
Eagle Mountain, Utah. Energy now.
We really want to change the world today. We just want to help the world.
866-536-1100.
That's the toll-free call-in number, 866-536-1100 for our Free Energy Now radio show. If you're listening live, feel free to call in if you have any questions for John Murray, our guest. He is the son of P. Henry Murray, inventor of a radiant energy technology that harnesses cosmic energy, for lack of better terminology, and a device that he came up with several decades ago was producing 50,000 watts. It's a solid-state device, no moving parts, sitting there cranking out 50,000 watts. Imagine that. John, as we come back into this, before we talk about, you know, what we can do to bring this technology forward that has languished for so long, and I realize that, you know, you're in a bit of a burnout mode after all these years of trying to work different avenues to bring this technology forward. Let's talk for a second about the theory. How does this stuff work? Why is this device able to harness energy from nothing, so to speak? Obviously, it's coming from somewhere. What is that somewhere, and how is that being activated?
Well, there are a number of theories that are beginning to show their head in the world. The string theory, for one. There's also a theory that there's energy in a vacuum. They call that zero-point energy. There's also the theory of two of the students of Einstein, Wheeler and Landvogt, that they said the energy was the result of geometric time and space. And because the universe is in motion, it must be generating energy. And that's a theory that has had considerable backing, and that's one that I like very much. There's also a theory NASA came up with that the Earth, above the Earth's North Pole, is a great power source. And this is what gives rise to the Aurora Borealis on the North Pole, and the Southern Lights on the South Pole. And this is a very viable theory, but there's been a lot of opposition to that theory. The University of Alaska proposed a research study to see if that was possible, and Congress laughed it out of committee. But it's very plausible, because if you measure the intensity of the northern lights, you've got millions of watts of power.
You know, when you were describing that in your DVD, as we were watching that together the other day, a light bulb came on in my head that I was kind of kicking myself that I'd never made this connection before. It seems so, it's laughably simple in my opinion. We understand tidal energy and why that works. You've got the moon rotating around the Earth, and it has a gravitational pull on the water. The oceans, making the oceans go up and down, so you have the tides coming and going as the Earth rotates daily. And so there are technologies that harness that energy, tidal technologies. We have an index page on our website at pezwiki.com identifying a number of these, and a couple of them are actually in our top 100 clean energy technology listing, companies that are harnessing this influx and outflow of the tidal energy on a cyclical basis. It's a very logical deduction. Why should we be surprised? The Earth is such a, we know it's a magnetic body floating through space, and we understand the principle of magnetic induction, which you have a magnet passes by an electromagnet, and it causes a flow of electrons in the wire as it goes by the wire. This is very well understood science. Why do we need much imagination to see the Earth as a huge electromagnet, so to speak, floating in space with all kinds of bodies around it, the sun, the moon, the other planets, and who knows what else is out there, causing flux in that magnetic field? And if there's flux, then you can harness that flux, just like the tidal energy. So I really like the title of your book, The Sea of Energy, in which the Earth floats. You have this huge electromagnet floating through space, causing flux. Why not put something out there to harness that? And that's apparently what your dad was doing.
Well, you know, they have, with the satellites, identified the Van Allen Belt, and there is no reason why there are other planets or other heavenly bodies that have iron core, and with all of these moving together, and we know that we're rotating in a great rotation, that the even the Milky Way is rotating through some part of space, and everything is moving, it must be producing energy, because it follows Wheeler and Lanzo's idea, geometric space and time rotating would produce an energy. And it, to me, it's a simple thing, because I've seen it work, and I believe my father, I know my father detected it.
Not only detected it, but he was harnessing it.
Detected and harnessed it. He made it work, and I grew up watching him work on it.
Now, not only did you grow up watching him, he actually tailored you to be able to pick up where he left off, didn't he?
Well, that was always what my mother used to always say, because when I got into high school, I fell in love with the military. And my mother used to say, if you're not going to follow your father's work, you better tell him now, because he's counting on it. And really, the only job I ever had other than the Army, I worked for the Salt Lake Tribune as a copy boy. And they offered me a job. And no, my dad said he had to have me in the lab. And I went to work when I was 16, for my father, full-time in the lab. Well, I say full-time other than school. I went to school, and then I worked in the lab. So my father always counted on me taking over the business.
How well do you feel like you understand what it was that your father was doing?
Well, I don't think my father understood everything. He was an intuitive researcher, and he would put things together the way he saw it in his mind. And so he used to think that it came from the universe, but he didn't. He didn't come up with that sea of energy. That was my word. He called it beyond the light rays, an energy beyond the light rays. And for the lack of a better word, he called it radiant energy. which I called it the sea of energy, because it's obviously coming from the universe.
Well, either one is a harnessing of energy that's out there, so to speak, available to us continuously. And
it would take a real research project to put this thing together and make it work. It won't be something we'll just turn on tomorrow, because I would have to go through his notes very carefully and put everything together. And I would need help from good solid state physicists, and maybe we can put the thing together in a few years.
Well, let's get into that when we come back from break, what it would take.
Yeah, it would take 3 to 5 years to finish this project, but I have the confidence.
Let's pick that up when we come back from break, okay?
All right.
Will you be ready when gas prices go back up? Convert your vehicle to a hydrogen boost hybrid. Get 15 to 25% improved gas mileage guaranteed or your money back and cleaner emissions. Hydrogen Boost has 8 years of experience in hydrogen injection and mileage enhancement and a money back satisfaction guarantee. Visit www.hydrogen-boost.com or call 518-480-4026. Hydrogen Boost, 518-480-4026 or visit hydrogen-boost.com.
Free energy, now!
Sterling Allen coming back at you. We are interviewing John Murray. He is the son of T. Henry Murray, inventor of the radiant energy technology. He had prototypes several decades ago, the final of which delivered up to 50,000 watts. That's 50 kilowatts, more than enough to run 10, 15 homes. And this technology ended up languishing for many years. And before we pick up where we left off before the break, and that is talking about what it would take to bring this technology forward, let's just address for a minute or two some of the politics. And I know, you know, we could spend an hour or two or more on this subject, and to ask you to try and wrap this up in two, three minutes is doing a grave injustice. But let's just talk on the politics for a second of why this didn't come forward.
Well, one time I was talking with the Air Force Systems Command, or Colonel Strube. Colonel Strube said, "Do you realize the large amount of political pressure there is against this technology?" And he kind of brought it to my mind, and this was in the late 70s when he said this. I know in the beginning, and I mentioned earlier John L. Lewis had so much power with the Roosevelt administration that he said that to the director of the Rural Electrification Administration that if he signed a contract with my father that there'd be a new administrator. And sure enough, Carmody didn't last 30 days after he signed the contract. There have been a lot of incidents like this over the years. I had a senator from Utah, Senator Wallace Bennett, not the Bennett that's a senator now, but Wallace Bennett, when the NASA was going to sponsor the program, he stepped in and killed it in the Appropriations Committee.
Where was it at the time your father passed away or at that period of time?
Where were we?
Yeah.
Well, we were doing
as a company
a lot of
in terms of rolling it out.
Pardon?
In terms of rolling it out and overcoming the opposition, where was the company at the time or around the time your father passed away?
Well, we have a strange habit of having to eat, so we were doing research, contract research for other people as well as working on Radiant Energy, and our progress on Radiant Energy in 10 years is less than what we should do in 1 year.
So if there was a focused effort, you could have done in 1 year what you did in the last 10 years.
Yes.
And your DVD talks about some of that opposition and the politics that were involved, and people can, of course, refer to that to get some additional information as well as your book. Let's jump now into the question of what is it going to take to see this technology emerge?
Well, in 1955, when I first came home from overseas, 55, 56, my father and I spent a large amount of time calculating what each phase of the research would cost. And we came up with $5 million. That is 1956 dollars. If you put 1956 dollars into 2008 dollars, we're talking $18, $20 million.
And that's to
to build a prototype from which we can begin to standardize the unit to take it to the market.
So a production prototype to get it to that stage, doing all the engineering to do the alpha and beta testing, to then be able to hit copy, to get to that production prototype, that would be $18 to $20 million.
Yes. Now, people might choke at that, but let me remind them, Bell Laboratories worked on the germanium semiconductor for 20 years, and they spent $1 million a year doing it. And that's 1930 to the 41 years.
In my exposure to the energy industry, I don't see that number as being unnecessarily high. When you're talking about the cost of research and development, you've got the engineers, you've got the laboratory expenses, you've got other administrative expenses, you've got legal expenses, and the one-off prototyping is really quite expensive, and getting the refinements and for such an exotic technology, that is, in my opinion, not a high number. It seems reasonable, in my opinion.
Well, thank you, Sterling. I've had a number of people agree with me, people will come back to me and say, we could do it for less. And I say, what's your basis for thinking you could do it for less? They don't know what has to be done.
Right. Now, of course, typically the first phase before getting that full tranche of the $18 to $20 million to complete that process is to replicate a working prototype. What do you think that amount would be to come up with that, whether you or someone else were to do that?
Well, I don't really believe that I can build a working prototype for less money. It's not the fact that it's the detailed work that has to be done that will have to go to other people. When I, in the 70s, when I was trying to build certain parts of the semiconductors, I had a man contract to do certain research for me, build certain parts, and he came back and said, John, unless you'll come up with $100,000 cash, I can't work any longer on this. It's costing me too much. And I didn't have $100,000 cash.
At the end of your DVD, you talk about a foundation that you've established to raise some money, and the cost of the DVD is actually quite high compared to what DVDs might go for. You're asking $35 plus $5 for shipping for something that maybe cost 50 cents to produce. And so there's a lot of markup there, and the purpose of that is to finance this endeavor, this foundation. What is the purpose of the foundation?
The purpose of my foundation is to work on energy of any type, but primarily to bring out my father's work. I believe that through publicity, and that's part of the purpose of this foundation, that the country can be brought aware that there are other sources of energy that are being ignored. Hydrogen energy, you can buy liquid hydrogen in downtown Phoenix. This is one of the things that the hydrogen car people advertise, and you can buy it for about what you pay for propane. And you get twice as much energy as you would out of propane.
So in this foundation, as you talked about primarily bringing forth your father's work, another question comes to mind. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the name T. Henry Murray is very famous in the free energy world, almost as famous as Nikola Tesla. It's one of the top five names that you hear bantered about when people discuss the history of free energy and some of the breakthroughs that have been accomplished. This is no small tale we're talking about. This is a very significant development in history. And there have been a lot of people who have tried to replicate, have done some variations. Who out there that you know of is the closest, maybe one or two entities that you might mention who are pursuing this technology and seem to be close to a certain extent?
Well, I would hesitate to say who might be closest, because one of the things that people don't write me and tell me what they're doing, and there are so many copycats that claim they're doing it, but they won't let me see what they're doing. I'd be willing to work as a consultant if somebody thinks they've got radiant energy, but they come back and they tell me, oh, we're using an iron core transformer. Well, then it's not radiant energy.
Well, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our segment here. I do want to make sure we give out the name of your domain one more time. Thehouseofmoray.org. And the name of your DVD, The Sea of Energy, is featured right there on the home page. We also make it available from our site. People can order it online.
You by PES, your energy systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net. And join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.
Radio 1100. Cave Creek, Phoenix. A division of Premier Radio Station.